Preacher rode at the head of the group with Cortland. The horse herd brought up the rear, raising its customary cloud of dust. That dust was gonna make them mighty easy to track if Red Knife decided to come after them. But nothing could be done about it, short of figuring out a way for the critters to sprout wings and fly.
Tell me about some of your adventures. Otis said he's heard people talking about you in St. Louis. They claim you've killed thousands of Indians, wrestled with bears and mountain lions, and explored more of the frontier than any white man west of the Mississippi.
Yeah, well, people like to talk. And whenever the facts ain't interesting enough, they just make up a story or three.
But you have fought a lot of Indians, right?
I suppose. But I've been good friends with even more of them. It don't pay to make an enemy when you can make a friend instead.
You don't run away from trouble, though. I can tell that about you.
Well, I'll allow that the good Lord didn't put any back up when he was stirring the pot to make me. Well, it's just a matter of common sense. You can't run away from trouble without turning your back on it. The second you do that, that's when it'll jump right on top of you.
That's actually quite profound.
Oh, like I said, common sense.
Have you ever been married?
It depends on whether you reckon there's got to be a church and a minister involved for that. I've known a heap of women I was mighty fond of, and I reckon they felt the same way about me.
You're talking about squaws?
I'm talking about women. Out here in the frontier, folks is folks, and it don't take you long to get where you don't care what color their skin is. I just spent the winter with a Dutchman, a dwarf, a Crow Indian, and a fellow as black as the ace of spades. I got the same name for all of them. Friend.
That's a very admirable attitude. I meant no offense.
And none taken. As for the gals I've knowed, some were Injun, some weren't. And before you ask, I don't know if they got any kids. They could be, but just don't know.
Doesn't that uncertainty ever bother you?
No, not really. Everybody has to make his own way in the world. I might have me a real son one of these days. Yeah, that wouldn't be bad, I suppose. But not till I'm ready to settle down, and Lord knows when that'll be.
Not anytime soon, I expect. And I can say that, having known you less than a day.
The group didn't encounter any trouble that day or the next. They didn't see any Indians either, only wildlife. The antelope and moose they came upon impressed the men, but they watched from a rise in absolute awe as a herd of several thousand buffalo rumbled past.
And that's just a little herd. It don't even amount to much. Sometimes the buff stretch as far as the eye can see. Move past all day without ever stopping. Might still be at it the next morning, too.
There must be millions and millions of them out here.
Sure as hell more than you can ever imagine.
Late in the afternoon, they entered a range of low, rolling hills. After traveling for miles on the treeless plains, the sight of trees was a welcome one for Preacher. But he knew the terrain would be slightly more rugged from there. They were looking for a good place to make camp when Preacher spotted three riders coming toward them.
Indians!
Cortland started to lift the rifle he carried across the cantle of his saddle.
Now hold on. Those are Crow. They're friendly. At least they were the last I heard.
How can you tell from this distance? They just look like Indians to me.
Now you learn to tell the difference pretty quick out here. You better, or else you're likely to make a mistake that could turn out to be fatal. You stay here. Hold the wagons and the horses where they are. I'll go talk to those fellas.
Preacher heeled horse into motion again and trotted toward the three men, who had brought their own mounts to a halt. As he came closer, his first impression was confirmed. The men were Crow, members of the same tribe as his friend Nighthawk.
Hello to my friends of the Crow people.
You are the one called Preacher.
You know me, and you know I am a friend to the Crow. I've eaten meat with you, and I've slept in your lodges, and I've fought at your side against your enemies.
As the Crow have fought with you against your enemies.
Preacher inclined his head in acknowledgement of that point.
Why have these white men come here?
They're taking those horses to Fort Gifford. You've heard of the place?
It is there, beside the Muddy River. Some of our people go there to trade.
But not you and your brothers.
We are not traders, we are hunters.
And that's why you're out here today, huh? You looking for game?
Our families would eat. We must hunt.
A Blackfoot war party roams somewhere behind us. They're led by Red Knife. You know him?
Red Knife is worse than the other Blackfoot. He is like a bear driven mad by hate, especially toward white men.
You know why?
Because a worm of madness crawled into his ear while he slept, perhaps.
Well, you might want to go see how the hunting is elsewhere.
We do not fear the Blackfoot.
I never said you did. But Red Knife has more men than the fingers on all your hands. You wouldn't go up to a bear and slap it on the snout. Only a fool would do that.
We ride where we please.
Okay. How far is it to Fort Gifford?
4 days' ride from here. With those wagons, 5, perhaps 6.
Thank you. And may the spirit smile upon you.
And on you, white man. You may need all the assistance you can get from the spirits.
2 more days of steady progress passed. Preacher began to hope that they would reach Fort Gifford without being attacked again, but nagging doubt still lurked in the back of his mind. As they came to an area of rugged badlands, the doubt grew stronger. The rocky pine-dotted buttes thrusting upward with narrow gaps between them looked like perfect places for an ambush. He thought about suggesting they take the horse herd around the buttes rather than through them, but he knew from previous visits to the Badlands that they stretched for a number of miles east and west. Detouring around them would add several days to the trip, giving Red Knife even more time to marshal his forces against them if he wasn't doing that already.
Everybody best keep his eyes open. There are plenty of places in here for Red Knife to hide.
We'll be riding with our hands on our guns, you can be sure of that.
Cortland turned in the saddle and waved Freeman forward from beside the third wagon.
Spread the word for everyone to be especially alert.
You think those Blackfoot might have gotten ahead of us?
Oh yeah, they could be lurking up there in those buttes.
I'll tell the fellas.
Yo, you take a look around.
That dog seems to understand everything you say to him.
Well, dog and me been together a long time. Reckon we know how each other think by now. Same's true for old horse here. We're all getting a mighty long in the tooth, but we ain't ready to be put out to pasture just yet.
Haven't been around you for a few days now, preacher. I think the day you're ready to be put out to pasture is still a long, long time in the future.
Well, maybe. Assuming I don't get shot or stabbed or skewered with an arrow, have my head stove in with a tomahawk. Well, other than that, I might be all right.
It didn't take long for the group to fully penetrate the Badlands. The open terrain fell behind them. The passages between the buttes were wide enough for the herd to travel through without going single file, but the steep pine-dotted slopes were close enough on both sides to seem looming and dark. Preacher watched for Dog to return, but the minutes dragged past and eventually turned into an hour with no sign of the big curve. No gunshots had disturbed the warm silence, but the whistle of an arrow through the air wouldn't travel very far. Dog had fought grizzly bears and mountain lions and all manner of bad men. The preacher wasn't overly concerned about him being able to take care of himself. Still, he would have been relieved to see Dog bounding back into sight. But it didn't happen. The skin on the back of Preacher's neck began to crawl under the long, thick, dark hair. Every instinct in his body told him something had happened. It wasn't over. The threat still loomed just as surely as those piney slopes on either side of him. He wasn't sure what warned him. Flicker of movement, perhaps. Maybe even the flutter of the arrow's fletching as it flew through the air. Whatever it was, he suddenly leaned forward over horse's neck. The arrow brushed across the back of his neck and buried its flint head harmlessly in the ground. Preacher had a pretty good idea of the spots in the trees where the arrow had been launched, so he straightened and flung his rifle to his shoulder. A Blackfoot warrior tumbled out into the open with blood gushing from a wound to the chest. Both bullets and arrows peppered the ground around the wagon train. Preacher kicked his foot loose from the stirrup and dived out of the saddle.
Use the wagons for cover.
What about the horses?
We'll have to round them up later. We're hemmed in.
Horse ran clear of the wagons. Preacher was glad to see the stallion go.
Pull the wagons up side by side.
The drivers, pale-faced with fear as arrows flew around them, stayed cool-headed enough to line up the wagons all three abreast. The men crowded in between them for cover. The wagons served another purpose, too. They blocked the gap for the most part, so the horse herd couldn't stampede past them. Spooked by the gunfire, the horses were milling around, but they hadn't turned to bolt back in the other direction. Judging by the number of arrows flying out of the trees, Red Knife had indeed increased the ranks of his war party.
Shoot almost anywhere in those trees, you've got a chance of hitting one of those varmints. Keep firing!
Preacher's keen eyes searched the slopes. Whenever he saw a flash of movement or a bit of cover, he was ready to press the rifle's trigger.
I got one! I saw the ball hit him in the head!
Good job! Now see if you can get another one!
Preacher began to watch for puffs of powder smoke, marking the location of warriors armed with rifles. Preacher grimaced when he saw the horses getting hit.
We have to do something! Those horses represent my life savings! If I lose the herd, I'll be ruined!
We're gonna pull the wagons on the right all the way up to the front to make an opening. Then I'll drive the herd through as fast as I can.
They'll stampede! There's no telling how far they'll run!
If they stay here, they're gonna wind up full of arrows, and so will we. As soon as the horses are through, the wagons will light a shuck after them. That'll kick up quite a bit of dust, which ought to help. Red Knife's men won't be able to draw quite as good a bead on it.
It seems awfully risky.
Well, the sun's getting up in the morning. Come on, let's go. Move that wagon.
Otis Freeman leaped to the wagon seat, jerked the reins free from the brake lever, and grabbed the whip from its socket.
Yeah! Move, you jugheads, move!
Horse answered Preacher's summons, pounding up through a storm of arrows. Preacher galloped around the herd, circling to get behind the horses, which brought him pretty close to the trees. He guided horse with his knees, using his hands to yank the brace of pistols from behind his belt. He thrust the weapons toward the slope. Jamming the empty guns behind his belt, he swung into position behind the herd. He drove his mount toward the nearest of the horses and snatched his hat off his head to swat it at the animal's rump. Several horses ran, and the others naturally followed suit. It took only seconds for a full-fledged stampede to develop. The horses raced through the gap created by Freeman pulling the wagon on the right ahead of the others. Preacher raced after the herd, waving the wagons on. Freeman whipped up the lead wagon's team and got it moving again. The other vehicles fell in behind them, full of men who'd let their mounts run free and taken cover among the supplies, firing out the backs and from the sides where they had raised the canvas cover. Preacher jerked his other two pistols out of holsters he had fashioned and strapped to his saddle. The arrows were thick around him, almost like flint-tipped horizontal rain. The driver of the second wagon tumbled off the seat with two arrows lodged in his body. One of the men riding in the back of the vehicle scrambled up onto the seat and grabbed the reins. The mule team never slowed down. With the frantic horse herd leading the way, the party of white men fled through the gap. As they neared the end of it, where the landscape opened up into a wider, roughly circular flat surrounded by buttes, some of the Blackfoot rushed out of the trees trying to intercept the fleeing men. Too close to the horses, a warrior was trampled under their flashing hooves. From the corner of his eye, Preacher saw a tomahawk spinning through the air at him. Preacher spotted another Blackfoot lining up a shot at him with bow and arrow. The mountain man's guns were all empty. Just as the warrior loosed the arrow, more than 100 pounds of gray fur struck him from behind. The arrow flew well over Preacher's head as the man who had fired it was driven to the ground by dog's weight.
Yeah, well, at least you got here before all the fighting was over this time.
The big cur ignored him and twisted away to launch himself at another Blackfoot. The horses stampeded out of the gap and ran loose on the flats, All three wagons careened after him, rolling swiftly across the level ground. Preacher didn't know how many men the party had lost, but some had survived, obviously. He fell back and galloped alongside the lead wagon. Otis Freeman was still at the reins, apparently unharmed. Wiley Cortland raced up on the other side of the team. He hadn't even lost his coonskin cap in the melee.
Head for that butte over there. There's some boulders at the base of it where we can ford up.
Freeman nodded to show he understood. He hauled on the reins to make the team veer in the right direction. Preacher fell back some more to let the wagons pass, and so did Cortland. Once the wagons had gone by, the two men rode side by side.
You hurt?
A couple of scratches where the arrows nicked me, so that's all. How about you?
I'm all right.
Lost a couple of men.
It could have been worse, and it might be yet.
Are they going to come after us?
I reckon you can bet that furry little hat you're wearing on that.
Mounted warriors charged out of the trees. They weren't going to be able to catch up before the wagons reached the boulders at the base of the butte. That would give him and the other men a fighting chance.
It's going to take a long time to round up all those horses, if we're ever able to.
As long as you're alive to give it a try, I reckon you've come out ahead.
Yes, I suppose you could look at it that way.
Freeman and the other drivers arranged the wagons in a half circle behind the rock and were unhitching the teams when Preacher and Cortland rode up. The spaces among the boulders were large enough for mules and saddle horses, but it would be crowded.
Load every gun you got. They're likely so mad right now they'll charge us flat out. And we need to mow down as many of them as we can so they'll decide it makes more sense to give up than to keep losing men.
Do what Preacher says.
The men worked quickly to get ready in the few moments they had. Preacher counted them again, came up with 9. They'd lost 2 men in the battle. Inside the boulders was a good defensive position, but it wasn't perfect. The wagon and boulders provided good cover only against a frontal assault. If the Blackfoot were able to get on the butte behind the wagons, they could fire down into the party of white men. Preacher stood beside the driver's box on the middle wagon and watched the mounted warriors slow and finally stop. He figured they were letting the rest of the war party catch up to him. As the dust began to settle, he saw that that was indeed the case. More and more men rode out of the gap to join the ones already facing the butte where the white men had taken cover.
Good Lord. How many of them are there?
Looks like 50 or 60.
And only 9 of us plus you, Preacher. Those are 5-1 odds at least.
I reckon we're just gonna have to work a mite harder than they do to stay alive.
You're taking this awfully well.
Ain't no reason to get worked up. That ain't gonna do any good. Man who stays calm and steady shoots straighter.
I suppose you're right. And I suppose I really shouldn't be worrying about those horses right now, should I?
Nope. Time to worry about staying alive. Because here those varmints come now.
Keep your heads down! Hold your fire! Let the varmints get closer!
The arrows rained down, thudding into the wagons, ripping the canvas covers and smashing into the rocks.
Down! Let him have it!
Preacher put his rifle to his shoulder and fired. The charge fell apart, dissolving into dusty, roiling confusion. In a matter of moments, a considerable amount of damage was inflicted on the war party. The preacher wasn't too surprised when the Blackfoot suddenly wheeled their ponies and galloped away from the butte.
Look at them run! We beat them!
I wouldn't count on that. They just realized they're paying too high a price to kill us. They'll get over being so mad, and then they're going to start figuring out a better way to go about doing it.
You mean they'll attack us again?
There's a better than even chance. No point in worrying about it now, though. We'll need to load all the guns again. Anybody hurt?
Yeah, Johnny is. You better come quick, Preacher.
The mountain man hurried over, dropped to a knee, and peered under the wagon. One of the men was lying with his legs pulled up, his body curled around the arrow embedded in his belly. In the heat of battle, Preacher hadn't seen the man fall. Pain must have driven the poor fellow to crawl under the wagon in a futile search for relief.
Couple of you get a hold of him. Ease him out from under there so I can take a look. I want 2 men on guard. Keep your eyes wide open. And don't just watch the spot where the engines rode off. You look all around, because they could come at us from any direction.
Carefully, two men rolled the wounded man onto his back and moved him from under the wagon. Both hands were clenched around the arrow's shaft where it entered his body. Preacher could tell the arrowhead had penetrated deeply into the man's vitals.
What's his name?
Johnny McKittrick.
Get him some water. Johnny. You hear me, Johnny?
I hurt awful bad. I think they got me.
Yeah, they did. They got you pretty bad, Johnny. I'm afraid you're done for.
Was there really any need to tell him that?
Look, sometimes a man needs to know the truth. Might be things he wants to say. Is there anybody you need word sent to about this, Johnny?
I don't know. My ma... Oh, my mom might still be alive. Her name is Neva McKittrick. She lives in Ohio, a little town called Glendora.
Neva McKittrick, Glendora, Ohio. We're all going to remember that. All of us who were here with you, Johnny.
I got the water.
You thirsty, Johnny?
Yeah, I am. Can I have a drink?
Yeah, it's liable to make you hurt worse.
I don't care. I'm mighty thirsty.
Damn, he's gone?
Yeah, and it's a blessing he went that fast. I've seen men with arrows in their gut who have lasted 7 or 8 hours. It was 7 or 8 hours of hell for him, too, let me tell you. I'm sorry for your loss.
I'm gonna kill all those red-skinned bastards.
That's enough! We're not going to lose our heads about this. We're going to stay calm. That's our best chance of fighting back and surviving. Isn't it, Preacher?
That's right.
Preacher looked at the men gathered around him.
We're still outnumbered, but we got more guns and ammunition than the Blackfoot have. And we're better shots, too.
But there are only 9 of us left. 10, counting Preacher. They keep whittling us down. Without Preacher, it's likely we'd all be dead by now.
We've killed a dozen of them for every man we've lost. Sooner or later, they're bound to get tired of that.
Preacher's right. Somebody wrap McKittrick's body in a blanket. We'll go ahead and lay him to rest properly while we've got the chance.
Cortland detailed a couple of men to dig a grave at the foot of the butte. While they were doing that, Preacher made sure all the guns were loaded and that the guards were keeping a good watch. Satisfied for the moment with the precautions, he went over to the spot inside the cluster of boulders where Dog lay on the ground next to Horse. The big cur's head rested on his paws, his ears pricking up as Preacher approached.
One of those varmints loosed an arrow at you that bounced off that thick skull of yours, didn't he? Knocked you out for a little while. That's why you didn't come back right away. But when the fighting started, you heard it and come running.
Dog's tongue lolled out by way of answer.
Well, you've always been a hard-headed critter. I just reckon it came in handy this time.
While he was at it, he checked the stallion for injuries as well, but he didn't find any. Somehow, Horse had avoided all the arrows and rifle balls, and his knack for doing that had saved Preacher's life more than once. Spotting Preacher, Cortland walked over.
Is there any reason the men shouldn't boil some coffee and have something to eat?
Nope, no reason at all. It's a good idea. We're not liable to be sleeping much tonight anyway.
I thought Indians didn't usually attack at night.
An Indian attacks when it best suits them, any hour of the day or night. You ain't forgot about the ones who killed Jenkins, have you?
Actually, I guess I had. Before we started out here, I was told so many things about the Indians. Seemed like everyone I met in St. Louis had an opinion.
And most of them was wrong, I'll bet. Now here's what I want to do. We're going to split up. 6 of your men down here with the wagons where most of the Blackfoot will attack. And I'll take 3 up that butte behind us.
Are you sure that's a good idea? Splitting a force that's already so small?
We can't let the Blackfoot take the high ground behind us. If they do, they'll hit us from 2 directions at once and we won't stand a chance. Not only that, but from up there, we'll have a better shot at the ones out on the flat. That's why I want your 3 best shots to go with me up there.
I suppose that makes sense. Otis is an excellent shot. Better than me, that's for sure. I'll find out who's the best among the others.
Couple hours of daylight left. They may come at us again at dusk, when the light's mighty tricky for shooting. If they don't, it'll be tonight, once it's good and dark.
The Blackfoot hadn't reappeared by the time night began to settle over the Badlands. Johnny McKittrick had been laid to rest, and the men had had a grim, mostly silent meal. They stood watchfully, waiting to see what was going to happen. Thankfully, nothing did. The two men who'd be climbing the butte along with Preacher and Otis Freeman were Clyde Woodbury and Lou Elkins. They were all taking plenty of powder and shot with them.
How do you think they'll come at us, if they do?
There's no telling. Might be sneaky about it, or they might just charge up the other side of the butte yelling and shooting arrows. We just gotta be ready for whatever comes, and we got to hold the high ground. Otherwise, they'll overrun us, and that'll be the end of it.
Don't worry about us, we'll fight.
I know that, Elkins.
The four men started up the slope. It wasn't sheer, but it was steep. They had to lean forward and use their hands to help climb most of the way. Dog went along and made it without much of a struggle, as did Preacher. Freeman and the others were winded by the time they reached the top. The butte was fairly level and formed a rough square about 40 feet on each side. Stunted pines grew around the edges. In the center was a dark heap of stone rearing about a dozen feet high. It hadn't been visible from below.
Is that a natural formation?
That's hard to say. It might be. Or the Indians might have built it sometime in the past.
Why would they do that?
This could be a holy place for them. But not for the Blackfoot, though. That ain't why they're trying so hard to kill us. This ain't really their stomping ground. They roam pretty far afield when they're out looking for war, and it's just our bad luck they come across us.
Yeah, our bad luck, all right. It looks almost like an altar of some sort. You think whatever tribe built it ever had, well, human sacrifices here?
I don't know.
Using the trees for cover, the men spread out on the far side of the butte to wait. Preacher stretched out on the ground, Dog close beside him. He had the veteran frontiersman's ability to fall asleep almost instantly under any conditions, and he seized the opportunity now to get a nap. He dozed. He knew Dog would awaken him if anything threatened him, assuming his own instincts didn't rouse him first. They both slept lightly, like wild animals. Time passed. Preacher eventually woke up and checked on the other men, all of whom were still wide awake and tensely alert.
Anything moving around out there?
Nothing that I can see or hear. Of course, that don't really mean much, does it? Those savages can move around without being seen or heard, can't they?
Yeah, they're pretty sneaky. By the time you know they're there, it's liable to be too late to do anything about it, but you just keep watching and listening anyway. It's really the only thing we can do.
Preacher moved back to his spot and settled down to wait again.
That ain't no goddamn bird.
He picked up both pistols.
Take it easy, Dog. They're gonna be here in a minute.
A dark figure suddenly flitted from behind one of the trees on the slope, a short distance down from the crest, and then it started toward the top. Preacher lifted his right-hand pistol. A dozen other Blackfoot warriors leaped up from where they'd crawled and lunged for the top. The men cut down more than half of the attackers, but five warriors were still alive to reach the crest. Preacher surged to his feet and leaped forward to meet the charge of the closest one. The mountain man smashed the butt of his empty rifle into the Blackfoot's throat, crushing his windpipe. Preacher struck again, shattering the warrior's jaw and putting him down and out. The Blackfoot would likely suffocate without ever regaining consciousness. A few yards away, Dog had another of the warriors down on the ground. Preacher knew the big cur could handle himself, so he turned toward Freeman, who was locked in a desperate struggle with one of the Blackfoot. Freeman wrenched the tomahawk out of the man's hand and slashed it across his face. The warrior staggered back. screaming went after it, hacking away. Preacher hurried on to see if one of the other men needed a hand. He was too late to help Clyde Woodbury. One of the Blackfoot was rising to his feet, blood dripping knife in his hand. Preacher pulled his tomahawk and threw it at the warrior. Lou Elkins had his hands locked around his opponent's throat as they rolled on the ground. Preacher knew someone's neck was just broken. He was ready with his tomahawk if the Blackfoot was the one who got up. It was Elkins who stumbled to his feet.
Looks like this batch is done for, but it sounds like the other fellas got their hands full.
Where's Clyde?
He didn't make it. One of the Blackfoot cut his throat.
Damn! Clyde was a good man. We'll never even the score for the fellas we've lost.
Yeah, well, I expect the Blackfoot feel the same way.
Preacher brought his rifle to his shoulder and looked over the edge of the butte. In the light from the stars and the quarter moon, he could see bodies scattered on the flat below. The other members of the war party had launched their attack when the fight started on top of the butte. Cortland and the other four men had inflicted quite a few casualties. Preacher could see shadows moving on the flat. Figuring anybody still moving out on the flat was an enemy, he took aim.
Get your rifles up!
Then the leading edge of the attack broke past the wagons. Suddenly, the fighting was hand to hand.
Come on!
With Dog at his side, Preacher plunged into the melee among the boulders. He raised his rifle for a strike. Preacher pulled his knife from the scabbard. He caught another warrior from behind and drove the knife into the man's back. With pistol shots and arrows still being traded, the surviving warriors withdrew, taking many of their dead and wounded comrades with them. As the Blackfoot fled, Preacher leaned against a boulder.
Let him go!
Wiley Cortland stumbled over to him.
Oh, my God, Preacher, you all right? You're covered with blood.
Most of it ain't mine. At least I don't think it is. Haven't really had time to check. How about you?
I'll be all right. Some more cuts and bruises, that's all. What do we do for now?
Reload and maintain your positions. Red Knife could come back. Unless he was killed in the fighting, which is what I'm hoping. If he was, the rest of that bunch will be more than likely to figure it ain't worth it to keep coming after us.
They might as well try to finish us off. There aren't that many of us left. We don't have much to live for. And those horses are long gone.
Cortland and the others followed Preacher's orders, loading their guns and taking up positions behind the wagons. The canvas covers were so shredded they were almost useless, but the thick boards would still stop an arrow or a rifle ball. In addition to Clyde Woodbury on top of the butte, the party had lost two more men, which left their number at six, plus Preacher.
I'm gonna go back up on top of that butte where I can keep an eye out for them if they come back. You should send a couple of men to fetch down Woodbury's body.
You're not going to slip off and leave us here, are you?
Hey, frontiersmen wouldn't do that.
I know. I meant no offense. I just never had to deal with anything like this before.
You're doing fine. It won't go on for much longer.
What do you mean by that?
I mean those varmints are bound to give up pretty soon. Either that, or they'll wipe us out.
Morning came and found Preacher on the butte. There had been no sign of the Blackfoot returning by the time the sky grew light in the east with the approach of dawn. Once the sun had risen, Preacher stood up and surveyed the surrounding countryside. From the top of the butte, he could see a long way in every direction. He noted two things of considerable interest. Several miles to the south, a haze of dust hung in the air, as if a number of riders were on the move. The dust was moving away from the Badlands. To the north, he spotted a number of dark shapes drifting through one of the grassy gaps between buttes about half a mile away. After a few moments, he recognized what he was looking at. It was Cortland's horses. The herd had run itself out after the stampede and stopped to graze well away from the fighting. Preacher and Dog made their way down to the camp. Cortland, Freeman, and the other men were obviously exhausted, but they were awake and relatively alert. Three blanket-shrouded shapes lying on the ground were a grim reminder of the price they had paid. A few dead Blackfoot were sprawled around the camp as well.
We'd best drag those bodies out of the rocks. Some of the others will come back for them later so they can be took care of Blackfoot fashion.
Why should we be that considerate of their feelings?
Because if they've decided not to come after us again, we don't want to rile them back up. You can fight somebody. Hell, you can even hate them without disrespecting them.
You really think they might let us go this time?
Maybe. We've killed a whole heap of them. Red Knife wouldn't want to go back to his people with the entire war party wiped out and nothing to show for it.
All right. However much time we have, we'll take advantage of it. As soon as we've buried our men, we'll move out and start looking for those horses, even though they're probably scattered clear to hell and gone.
Now, you're wrong about that. I spotted them up from the top of the butte. They're grazing in a little pocket about a half mile north of here.
All of them?
Well, I couldn't say about that. I saw a good-sized bunch, though. Should be most of them. This is new territory to them. They'll stick together for the most part. Makes them feel safer that way.
Then there's still a chance to salvage something from this. Let's get busy. I don't want something to spook those animals and make them bolt again before we can round them up.
Cortland's spirits rose visibly when, ahead of the others, he and Preacher reached the pasture where the horses were grazing. They reined in a distance away so as not to spook them.
We may have lost a few, but nearly all of them are here. Now, if we can just get them to Fort Gifford. It won't be easy, but nothing about this trip has been easy so far, has it?
I reckon you fellows were actually pretty lucky to make it as far as you did before things went to hell.
I know. I should have hired more men. Men like you, Preacher, who knew what they were doing. Instead, I hired men who had experience working with horses.
Those boys are good fighters. I can't fault them for that. If you'd run into a smaller war party, or one that wasn't led by somebody as loco as Red Knife, chances are you would have been all right.
Well, your share of the profits will be bigger now. There's something to be said for that.
The drivers brought the wagons to a halt before they reached the horse herd. Preacher, Cortland, Prince, and Boylan rode ahead to round up the animals, taking it slow and easy. By mid-morning, they had the herd headed north again, with the wagons following along behind. Since the others seemed to be able to keep the herd moving, Preacher had split off from the group in the afternoon, telling Cortland he was going to do some scouting. He, horse, and dog fell back a couple of miles to search for any sign of pursuit. Not seeing any, they ranged in a big circle to make sure the Blackfoot weren't trying to slip past and set up an ambush somewhere ahead of Cortland's party. Other than some bear, elk, antelope, and moose, Preacher and his animal companion seemed to be alone in the vast, beautiful frontier. The rocky pine-dotted buttes fell behind them at last, and they entered an area of grassy prairies and rolling hills. Preacher could see snow-capped mountains in almost every direction he looked, but none of the peaks were close. He and Cortland's men would reach the valley of the Missouri before they had to cross any of those ranges.
Come on, Dog. Let's head back.
Wiley Cortland and Lou Elkins had anxious expressions on their faces when Preacher rode up to rejoin the party.
You've been gone a long time. I was afraid something had happened to you, even though I know how unlikely that is.
We took a good long look around. I didn't see hide nor hair of those Blackfoot, nor any other hostiles.
You serious?
Oh, I wouldn't josh about a thing like that.
So we're out of danger?
I didn't say that. It's still gonna take us 3 or 4 days to make it to the fort. Plenty of things can happen in that much time. Red Knife could catch up to us. You never can tell what we'll run into betwixt here and there, either.
But right now?
Well, right now it appears nobody's fixing to try to kill you. So you count your blessings, huh?
Oh, yes. Most definitely.
Now, when we camp tonight, I want 3 men standing guard all the time. 2-hour shifts.
What? You just said the Indians weren't chasing us.
I said they ain't close. Now, that don't mean they couldn't catch up to us during the night.
You've gotten us this far, Preacher. We'll do whatever you think is best.
Yeah, Preacher. I didn't mean anything by what I just said.
Hell, I'll bet you've even forgotten more about staying alive out here than all the rest of us will ever know put together.
The night passed quietly, and the party was on the move again early the next morning. The terrain was rugged in places, but for the most part, they made good time. Preacher stayed with the group part of the time, but he and Dog also scouted ahead and behind quite a bit. When the day passed with no sign of the Blackfoot, Preacher began to hope Red Knife, or whoever was in charge, had been killed or given up. Not wiping out the party of white men would be a bitter pill to swallow, but losing more warriors would likely be worse. Soon two more days had passed, with men once more falling into a routine, easier to do when nobody was trying to kill them. Preacher made sure they didn't relax too much, though. As he had told Cortland, just because there was no immediate threat did not mean they were out of the woods. The frontier always held dangers, often unseen and unexpected. The middle of the fifth day, they reached a broad valley with mountains to the north. A line of trees in the middle of the valley marked the course of a stream. Preacher saw sunlight winking off the flat, slow-moving surface of the water.
That'll be the Big Muddy, the Missouri River.
At last. But I don't see the fort.
Well, now, it really would have been a stroke of luck if you'd hit the river right at the spot where they built the fort. We should be in the right area, though. You said it was about 50 miles west of Fort Union. And I've been through here before a few years back, and I calculate we're in that general vicinity. The Missouri and the Yellowstone flow together about 50 miles over yonder, so we can't be that far from Fort Gifford. You fellas hold the herd here and let them graze. I'll find the fort and come on back to get you.
I can come with you.
No, I want all of you to stay here and keep your eyes wide open. Wouldn't want to get this close and then have something bad happen again.
Certainly not. All right, we'll make camp and wait for you to get back. I hope it doesn't take too long. I'm eager to see civilization again.
Preacher headed west along the river, figuring it was the most likely direction for the fort to lie. He followed the southern bank, since he was already on that side and didn't know on which side of the river the fort had been built. He estimated he'd ridden about 2 miles when he suddenly spotted movement on the riverbank ahead of him. Three men on horseback rode out of the trees. Preacher reined in sharply. He lifted his rifle from where it lay across the saddle in front of him and rested it in the crook of his left arm. The thumb of his right hand went around the hammer as he gripped the stock. He used his knees to nudge horse into motion again.
Stay close, Dog.
The three men had seen him and had reined in for a moment too. Then they rode forward cautiously, just like Preacher. As the distance between them lessened, Preacher could see the men were bearded, which meant the strangers were all white. But just because they weren't Indians didn't mean they were friendly. Preacher had plenty of white enemies out there, too.
Preacher! Preacher! Is that you, you mangy coyote?
Preacher relaxed and a grin spread over his rugged face. He lifted his rifle with one hand and held it over his head in greeting.
Quint Harrigan!
The mountain men brought their horses alongside each other and reached out to clasp hands.
Oh, dang it. How long's it been, Preacher? 4 years?
More like 5. He was at that rendezvous where 3 different Arapaho gals figured out poor old Audie'd been romancing them all at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Nighthawk told me later he could have warned Audie. But he didn't say nothing, because he wanted to see Audie's reaction when he got found out that Crow's one hell of a jokester. You seen those two lately? I ain't heard how they're doing.
Yeah, I just wintered with them, in fact. They're fine. They never really do change.
No more than you or the mountains do.
Harrigan waved the other two men forward.
You know Roland Brown and Bob Mahaffey?
Don't think I've had the pleasure.
They've only been out here a few years. They ain't old-timers like you and me. Boy, say howdy to Preacher.
Brown, who had a curling blonde beard, shook hands.
I've heard a lot about you, Preacher. Didn't know I'd ever have the honor to cross trails with you.
Well, it's my pleasure, Rowland. Mahaffey was dark and lean. His beard cropped so closely it wasn't much more than stubble. He shook hands as well and gave Preacher a friendly nod.
I hear tell you're the big skookum he-wolf in these parts, Preacher.
Yeah, well, folks like to talk. I don't make it all true.
In this case, though, it is. Ain't nobody from Canada to the Rio Grande who's been as many places and done as many things as Preacher here. Or fought as many fights, for that matter.
What brings you to this neck of the woods?
I'm looking for an outpost called Fort Gifford.
The three men exchanged glances, and Harrigan pointed over his shoulder with a thumb.
It's back that way, about a mile. We just come from there. We was about to do a little hunting. The bourgeois hired us to bring in some fresh meat for everybody.
Preacher was relieved to hear the fort was so close. That meant the likelihood of hostile Indians venturing into this area was small. He was curious about something else, though.
You're working for the American Fur Company now, Quint?
Oh, no. Not so you'd notice. We just took on this hunting job to help out and earn some extra supplies. Soon as we're done outfitting, we'll be heading for the mountains to get us some pelts. You're planning on spending the season trapping, ain't you, Preacher?
Yeah, but I got another chore to finish taking care of first. I've been helping out some pilgrims who are bound for Fort Gifford with a herd of horses. They're camped a couple of miles downriver. I need to go back and get them.
Horses, you see? They brought a whole herd of horses out here?
Yeah, good saddle mounts. They figure on trading some of them to the Indians and selling the rest to fellows like you.
Well, we got good horses, but not everybody does. Well, those fellas might make out all right.
That ain't really my business one way or the other. I'm just trying to get them there alive. We had some run-ins with the Blackfoot. War party led by Red Knife dogged our trail for a while.
Oh, Red Knife. I've heard plenty of stories about him. Old bad ones, too.
And he lives up to that reputation. He wiped out half the bunch I've been traveling with. He finally gave up, and not before I began to have my doubts about making it through.
I ain't seen the Redskin yet that can keep Preacher from going where he wants to go. Boys, I think I'll help Preacher herd them pilgrims onto the fort, if you don't mind making this hunting trip without me.
You mean we'll split the money the bourgeois promised us two ways instead of three? I reckon I can live with that.
Hell yeah! Me too! See you later, Quint!
The two men waved their farewells and turned their horses to ride back into the trees. They quickly disappeared from view.
I appreciate the company, Quinn, but you know I really didn't need the help.
Nah, I didn't figure you did. But we got old times to catch up on. Like you said, it's been 5 years. I see you still got this mangy old mutt.
Yeah, dog and horse and me are still trail partners. But tell me about this fort. I thought Fort Union was as far west as the outposts had come.
Gifford's been there less than a year. John Jacob Astor sent some fellas out to build it last spring. Took them all summer because they kept having to stop to fight the Indians.
Blackfoot?
Oh, yeah. The Arapaho, the Crow, even the Arikara seem to be settled down to might right now, if you can believe that. They didn't give no trouble.
The Arikara tried to lift my hair more times than I can remember. Seems mighty hard to believe they've turned peaceful.
Well, I said they ain't giving no trouble right now. Might be different tomorrow. Anyhow, once the fort was established, even the Blackfoot left it alone. Don't know how long things will stay that way, though. You know how those varmints are. Just knowing the fort's there probably sticks in their craw.
How about the bourgeois? What sort of fella is he?
Mr. Langley? Mighty fine fella, if you ask me. He's fair in his dealings. Sharp enough, mind you. Nobody's likely to snooker him, and anybody who tries likely won't try twice. But I like him, and he's got something else going for him. But I'll let you find out about that for yourself.
Oh, now, dang it, Quint, you know I never did like it when folks go to acting mysterious-like.
Oh, maybe not. But I don't want to ruin the surprise for you.
Harrigan changed the subject by standing up in his stirrups and peering along the riverbank.
Well, doggone it, if you weren't telling the truth. That's a whole herd of horses.
Well, of course it is. I ain't in the habit of lying.
I didn't mean to make it sound like you were. That's just the most horses I've seen in one place for a long time. It's pretty impressive.
Spread out on the grassy bank like they were, those horses were a pretty sight. As Preacher and Harrigan trotted toward the wagons, Wiley Cortland and Otis Freeman rode out to meet him.
Preacher, did you find the fort? Who's this?
This here's an old friend of mine, Quint Harrigan. I haven't yet laid eyes on the fort myself, but Quint knows right where it is. He's been staying there while him and his friends get outfitted. Quint, meet Wiley Cortland and Otis Freeman.
We're very pleased to meet you, Mr. Harrigan. I don't know if Preacher told you or not, but we've gone through quite an ordeal to get here.
Yeah, he said you had a little scrape or two with the Blackfoot. You shouldn't have any more trouble, though. Things are tamed down a mite in these parts.
How far is it to the fort?
About 3 miles.
Then we can get the horses there before dark.
That's right.
Otis, tell the rest of the men to get ready. We're moving out as soon as possible.
The horses would not be rushed, but it really didn't take that long to push the herd along the river to the fort. When they topped the hill and came inside of it, Preacher saw that the place resembled Fort Union and the other outposts he had visited, which were largely self-sufficient. A high stockade fence made of logs with a blockhouse at each corner surrounded a compound full of sturdy-looking log buildings. Fort Gifford had a trench dug into it from the river to water supply. There was a smokehouse for meat, what looked like a blacksmith shop, numerous storage buildings, a barracks, and the centerpiece, the big trading post where the bourgeois lived and did business. Preacher noted the outpost even had a small vegetable garden behind the trading post. That was a touch he hadn't expected. Smaller blockhouses flanking the gates were built on the parapet behind the stockade wall. The gates themselves were extra thick. It would take a cannon to blow them open. And luckily, the Indians hadn't mastered the concept of artillery yet.
I better ride ahead. Older fellas know me. I reckon it's this red brush of mine. Come on with me, Preacher.
Not seeing any harm in that, Preacher urged horse into a trot and fell in alongside Harrigan. Dog bounded ahead of him. Several men stood on the parapet holding rifles, and more rifle barrels protruded from the windows of the blockhouses on either side of the gates.
You boys don't take any chances, do you?
You know as well as I do that peace don't usually last out here. And nobody wants to be took by surprise when trouble comes calling.
That is sure as hell the truth.
Harrigan took off his hat and waved it over his head. His long red hair blew in the wind.
Open up, fellas! It's me!
The heavy gates began to swing open slowly as the men inside the stockade heaved on them. When the gap was wide enough, Preacher and Harrigan rode through.